Fox Sports Knoxville is proud to present the show that the fans deserve.
I'd consider myself a realist, all right, but in philosophical terms, I'm what's called a pessimist.
The show that the city needs.
This town deserves a better class of sports radio. And we're going to give it to them.
This is Talk Sports with John Reed and Cody McClure.
Leave one wolf alive and the sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves. Apologize for a couple minutes late. That's on me. My bad. Everyone else is ready to start the show at 10 a.m. I was trying to get something ready. That one's on me. Picking up this show right where we left off yesterday's show of me ruining the show. But how are we today? Ben Lee, thumbs up from Ben. Cody McClure.
Well, all my coffee's gone. I spilled it. It's now soaked into the wood here on the studio panel. So 24 ounces of pure Colombian black coffee gone.
How did you manage that?
Well, you see, the guys from It's Optional, which airs each day from 1 to 3 p.m. here on Fox Sports Knoxville.
Oh, no.
Continue to move these damn chairs, even though we've asked them 17 times.
I didn't know it was chair-related.
Yeah, it was chair-related.
Okay, so you're moving the chair and you knocked your coffee over?
I tried to move the chair, yeah. And,
how were you trying?
I thought I had it high enough, but one of the legs clipped the coffee.
Think back to the first time we moved the chairs. Known genius John Reed said the easiest way, take the one chair off. Like, I gave you a whole fable about the wolf, the story about the wolf and the chicken and the, what was the other, the bread? What's the other thing they have? And
I have no idea what you're talking
and
about.
And there's a river, and you got to get to both sides. You got to get to the other side of the river, but you can only take one thing at a time.
You take the plane.
You can't leave the wolf with the chicken, and you can't leave the chicken with the rice. Is it rice? Is it corn? It might be corn. So you got to go one at a time. You got to take the wolf over. Or you got to take the chicken over, actually, because the wolf doesn't want to eat the corn. So then you take the chicken over, and then as you come back, you get the wolf. You take the wolf back over, but as you leave the wolf, you grab the chicken and say, hey, chicken, we're going back across.
Why not just leave the wolf with the corn?
We got to get all three over.
Why are you trying to travel across the river with a wolf and corn anyway? I mean, I can understand needing the chicken for, you know, later on. But
you know, that's a whole different story.
You've never told me that story.
Yes, I have.
By the way.
Yes, I have.
No, I don't recall it.
I said it precisely in the same exact situation last week when we were moving the chairs. I said it's easiest to go one in, one out. And I said, like the guy with the chicken and the wolf. I didn't know it was rice. I don't think I ever said rice or corn or whatever, but I said there were three things.
Barley.
And you couldn't leave it because the other one will eat them.
Look, I think you're missing the point.
No, the point is you, instead of taking the extra 15 seconds to set the one chair on the floor.
I thought I could just muscle it over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did.
That is the point, is that you, instead of taking the extra 15 seconds to put the chair down and be safe, you thought Muscle Man by himself could pick up a chair in an awkward situation with the microphones hanging down, with no room to spare. You thought you could do it by yourself, and now you've spilled coffee everywhere, and now the studio smells like coffee.
Was that a problem?
I don't really like coffee.
Oh, okay. One of the best smells in the world. We've power ranked smells before.
I don't think coffee was on my top five.
Well, it was my number one.
It wasn't on mine.
So I'm kind of enjoying it, the way the coffee smokes into the wood. But you're missing the whole point. You're missing the whole point here. If the chairs had not been moved.
No, that's not the point.
Wouldn't have happened.
It's not the point.
It is the point.
The point is.
We told these guys four times.
The point is,
I mean,
together.
When did they get the point, you know?
The point is, together we are stronger than we are solo. You should have waited.
Well, you were
for either
busy.
Help.
You were doing things.
We could have moved it over during a break. We could have done the chicken and the wolf thing.
I don't know what I'll do without coffee.
One at a time.
I don't know that I can make it.
You just couldn't wait. Nah, it smells like just spilt coffee.
Well, that's a good smell. Ugh. It's not like I spilled bourbon and Sprite.
I wish you would have. Get down on the ground, just slop it up.
That'd be sticky.
So we're off to a bad start today. Save us with your story of the day.
Bryce Harper won the home run derby.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just want a national story.
It is a national story.
I guess that's where we're at.
A Washington national story.
Eh? Yeah, they got free.
No, he didn't like that one.
Yeah, because he plays for them.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
They got free something out of the deal. Did they get free hot dogs or something? Because he won?
I don't know. I only watched him versus Freddie Freeman, then I turned on wrestling.
So is that a better?
No, I mean, they completely walked back. Remember yesterday's winners and losers?
Yeah.
My number. Turns out they just pretended like that never happened, and then last night on Raw they had two triple threat matches to see who would fight for a chance to go to SummerSlam, and now we're going to get Roman Reigns versus Bobby Lashley again.
Isn't he bad for the
sport? The
sport?
Company?
I was going to say sport. Company.
I mean, yeah, sort of. Now maybe they'll let Lashley win again. I don't know. Maybe they're working for a triple threat match at SummerSlam. Who knows? I was going to say the story of my day was Team Fox Sports Knoxville going 2-0 last night at Bocce.
I completely forgot about that. My morning was so jumbled.
Cody McClure shows up and we go 2-0.
That's what happens when the Warriors add Kevin Durant.
Not exactly. We weren't necessarily in position to be calling ourselves the Warriors, and I don't think you were adding Kevin Durant.
I mean, I don't want to say the two items correlate specifically, but you guys were on a four-game losing streak before I joined.
I think it was much longer than four games.
And then I joined, and now it's a two-game winning streak.
Well,
so,
I mean, yeah, I'm not saying you didn't make a difference. I'm saying that I don't think we were the Warriors before you got there.
Well, that's true. That's
I was trying
they
to
were the Cavs pre-LeBron.
Yeah.
So you added that LeBron. Far, but okay, maybe.
You added a star bocce player.
I was going to say maybe you're the Chris Paul to our Rockets where we were playing pretty good, but you took us to another level.
I never knew how good I was until I started playing. And, I really discovered it the first game.
On the grass you had one good throw of like five of ten, so like five trips.
That's not a professional
The grass.
Court. They need to.
The grass has some divots. I mean, it's been a long bocce season. I mean, those guys, Todd and Phil and Elise and them, they play bocce year round. They don't really allow the grass time to heal up. But you got to know the divots. You got to know where you're going. Now the sand or the shell, as they call it, Cody McClure, pretty damn good on the shell.
Pretty impressive, if I must say myself. And look, I don't like to brag. I'm not the kind of guy to do that. But I was damn good. I mean, I was tough to beat.
It was like putting Giancarlo Stanton in Yankee Stadium. I mean, putting him there at that short right porch, just blasting home run after home run. Cody, I was like, Cody, you know, we got an early lead. I was like, Cody, mark the point. So, like, if you're leading, like, basically, if you're up, if you win the last round, you get to throw the white ball, which is the marker. There's a half line that you have to make the ball pass. Cody would throw his like 6 inches past the half line.
Got to beat him in the post. Beat him in the short game.
That's what he kept saying.
They weren't ready.
And then he would toss his right on it. So then they would have to go until they would get one closer, and they were just rolling past.
They were
either rolling past or not making it past the center line. And they'd be out of balls, then me and him would just have three left, and we'd just toss them out there and get a couple points and just do it again the next time.
It's like Shaq, man. You got to beat them in the post. That's where you beat them. Forget that long game. You know, my range is not very good in bocce. Now, finally, I did mess up.
But
when
you messed up, you did leave it short, so it didn't count.
And we were up like 11-3.
It was 11-3, so there was no pressure. But next week's the playoffs. Now there's pressure all the time.
Yep.
And I'll say poetically, our first-round matchup. Do you want to know who our first-round matchup is?
Same team we beat twice?
No, not Phil's team.
Phil's
team is apparently the defending champions, by the way.
Well, not anymore. Todd?
No, not Todd.
Is it the girls that beat us down in the first game?
It's the girls who beat us down that you laughed at and scoffed at.
I'm not worried about
them. And mocked us for losing the girls.
I'm not worried about them.
They're pretty good, man.
I'm pretty good, man.
We are 2-0.
They like that strategy, though. They put it short every time.
They're coming in on a 2-game losing streak. We're coming in on a 2-game winning streak.
Getting hot at the right time, huh?
We are Kemba Walker's UConn.
Yeah.
If we have to be Sabazz Napier's UConn, that will work too, I guess, because they won the title.
Sure.
And they were probably a little bit lower seeded. I think they were like a 7 seed. We're a 7 seed out of 8 teams, but we are on a 2-game winning streak. We're hot at the right time. We took 7 weeks to get our squad together, but I feel like we've messed. It's time to go. Shout out to Brandon from overtime, by the way. Completely redeeming himself from last week. Came up clutch, especially on the grass. I mean, he was a honing missile.
Yeah. He was great on the grass.
He was putting it right on the ball every time. Perfect execution from overtime, from the drives, Brandon. Shout out to Brandon. Round of applause for Brandon.
We won't have to play on the grass next week, will we?
That's their choice.
Oh. I hope they're not listening.
I think they like the shell the best.
Okay, good. Well, they're going to regret that decision.
It'll be a bad night for them if they pick the shells. Double elimination. It's double elimination. Well, even if we get off to a bad start, we have a chance to win our way in.
Don't even consider it. We're not getting off to a bad start.
That, along with me finally finding something I like to drink at Hops and Hollers. I'm not a beer guy, but I finally found me something.
You found yourself a raspberry?
It's like water. Carbonated water. Yeah, it's like water with alcohol in it. With a little bit of like raspberry taste to it. Black cherry, I think, is what it
was. Black cherry. It looked pretty good.
It was fun. There's no beer taste to it.
It's a beer, though?
I don't know if it's a beer. It's got 5% alcohol in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like
that's all that matters.
Todd's not slanging straw burritos at Hobbs and Holler, so it's right. More beer than that. It's not. It doesn't taste very sugary. No heartburn. Like this is a game changer.
Trey Wallace tweets in that they kept the chairs how they were. I must say, yes. Yesterday, the chairs were still backwards, but they were. We didn't move them yesterday.
Yeah, we had. To be honest, I'd given up in the chair war.
So the chairs were out of line still because of you guys. But Trey is correct in saying that they didn't move them again because we didn't move them again. So
I'm not blaming it's optional. I'm blaming you for spilling the coffee.
I think they take.
And I had given up in the chair war of 2018. I was just going to concede. And then just take the comfy black chair.
I was going to kind of concede, too, but then it looked like a clear path out, and I just – and I messed up, okay?
Some interesting, I guess, tidbits coming across the timeline last night. We've talked about College Football Matrix. We've had one of his coworkers, the professor, on to talk analytics with us. He came across with some – promising stats about Tennessee's chances to be a good football team this upcoming season. One of the people I lean to when it comes to that kind of talk is Will Warren. We'll grab Will Warren to kick off this show to talk about Tennessee's expectations and where they should finish up with the talent they have and the schedule they have, all that. Will's been peppering me with stats all weekend. Like, hey, let me come on the show. Hey, let me come on the show. All right. Will Warren could come on the show. Next, tentatively scheduled for next. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fox Sports Knoxville.
Fox Sports Knoxville is once again hitting the road for Tennessee's season opener, and we want you to gear up and get on the bus with Fan Run Radio. Listen all summer for our live broadcasts from area businesses. Come out and register to win 2 seats on the premier transportation bus to Charlotte and a $50 gift card from Alumni Hall. You'll also be entered for the grand prize, 2 seats on the bus, a $300 shopping spree to Alumni Hall, and 2 lower-level season tickets to Tennessee football. Gear up and get on the bus. Presented by Alumni Hall and Premier Transportation.
Welcome back to Talk Sports. Let's grab Will Warren, stats extraordinaire, friend of Talk Sports. Will Warren was sending me these numbers over the weekend. I said, okay, well, just stop bombarding me. Stop wasting my weekend with all these nerd numbers. Let's save it for the radio. So here we are. Will Warren, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, the best part is when I interrupt all of your weeknight plans with me just sending you things I've scribbled down on a notepad.
Yeah, just nonstop messages.
You've gone out to see a movie and you come out with 8 texts.
That's how it always happens. Every time I'm doing something, I have something from Will Warren that is important, but my brain's turned off. But yeah, here we are. All right, so you were sending me these numbers, and there's a guy, College Football Matrix, who I guess has put together. I guess the way I would describe it is he is the first person in college football to really try to take into account what coaches mean to wins and losses with, like, their performance. Is that a fair way to describe what he does with the coaching effect?
I'd say so. I mean, and his numbers are based off of he has a preseason schedule. He does he takes the talent of a team, which is the rolling 4-year average with attrition based off of the 247 sports consensus numbers. You take the location of the game, and then over history of both coaches have been there for a while, you can use the coach effect, which shows how many times has this coach won in a game where he was the less talented team on the road or at home, whatever, or how many times has he lost as the favorite.
Okay, and the numbers, I mean, you know, 2014, 2015, he was kind of the first person on to Butch Jones. You know, Butch Jones graded out, you know, negatively in a couple of seasons there. Like, hey, you know, he kind of cost Tennessee a game with negative coach effects. So you are, you know, you're looking at the numbers for, you know, obviously there's no data on Jeremy Pruitt yet, right?
There probably won't be any seriously useful data on him until about the start of year 3. Just because it takes a couple seasons to really measure how high or how low a coach is doing with his talent. I mean, after year 1 at Georgia, Kirby Smart went 3 games under expectation, and a lot of people were ready to, you know, can the Kirby Smart era already. And obviously it changed in year 2.
So we don't really have any numbers to judge Jeremy on, obviously, but we do have data on Tennessee's roster and Tennessee's schedule.
Yeah, and on basically every single opposing coach Tennessee will face this year. Tennessee does not face a new coach on the schedule in 2018.
So say that one more time.
Tennessee does not face a new coach on the schedule in 2018. They're all coaches that have been there for at least a year at each team.
Well, besides Dan Mullen.
Besides Dan Mullen. But Dan Mullen has the background at MSU.
Sure. Dan Mullen has, what, 9 years of data as a SEC head coach. Now, granted, I do think Florida's roster probably going to be, even coming off of a 4-7 season, is Florida's roster going to be more talented in year 1 than he ever had at Mississippi State? Because that feels like a no-duh statement to me. Like, it seems like common sense, like Florida would have recruited better even these last 2 or 3 years when McElwain was kind of slacking and maybe not developing them enough. But just from a talent standpoint, is this Florida team in year 1 going to be more talented than anyone Mullen's coached before?
Absolutely, and I don't think that means to say, like, automatically Florida, this 2018 Florida team is going to be better on the field than any Dan Mullen team before. Like, I don't think they're going to go 10-2 or 11-1 or whatever, but it will have more talent. And it's the same deal with this Tennessee team based on attrition, based on these rankings. You look at what College Football Matrix has put out, and because Butch Jones still recruited pretty well those last 3 years, Tennessee has, by 3-year class average, the 8th most talented roster in America.
So the 8th most in America.
Which sadly, is 5th most in the SEC.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, always, you know, that was the case even, you know, whenever you got so excited about the 2015 recruiting class, 2014 recruiting class, whatever one, you know, you had back-to-back top 7-ish classes.
Yeah.
And you always looked and it's like, yeah, it was still like 4th or 5th best in the SEC even then. So you're saying right now Tennessee comes into this season with the 8th most talented roster in the country?
On the 3-year average. No, on a 5-year class average, it's 12th in the country, 7th in the SEC.
12th in the country still
very
pretty
good.
But I mean, that does make sense with all of, you know, the ESPN. You know, ESPN this offseason did a, here are the 7 teams or whatever who fit the criteria of being a national champion on recruiting classes alone, and Tennessee was on that cutoff.
Yeah, and not only that, every champion except for the Deshaun Watson Clemson team since the early 90s has had at least a top 5 class average.
Yeah, and Clemson kind of, you know, is the anomaly there, but obviously it took a a, you know, his Herculean
close
effort.
And even then, Clemson was warmer. Clemson was 17th. They weren't far outside. It wasn't like this gigantic shift in parity.
But you had to have Deshaun Watson come in and put on a perfect performance in that title game.
Right.
And even then, you know, they won on a last play.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they did beat probably the team who graded out number one in those rankings over the 5 years. All right, so Tennessee's got a pretty talented roster.
Mm-hmm.
How does the schedule shake out?
Now, with the talent they have versus the opponent's talent, the location of the games, and the base coach effect, the average coach this year, you know, if it was like year three or year four for them or whatever, would go 8-4, 4-4 in the SEC. Now, pretty much everybody would be happy with that, right?
Oh, no, 8-4, I mean, I've said 8-4 is the ceiling.
Hmm.
Like, I do think there's a path to 8-4. Like, I don't think it's likely. You know, I'm not so much on the camp of 6-6 as a successful season. Like, don't get me wrong. I've said I'll take 6-6, and I will. Like, no one's going to be mad about that.
Right.
Although I do think 7-5, if Jeremy Pruitt and his staff are good,
yeah,
and we have a pretty good idea that we think the staff is good at least, even though, you know, some guys will be in a big profile job at their position for the first time. When I say that, I'm thinking, you know, Helton, mm-hmm. who was at USC as a third down coordinator and, you know, called plays at, was it Western Kentucky? He called plays at, that's not Tennessee. So, you know, the staff has a pedigree, they can recruit, blah, blah, blah. But we all think they're going to be pretty good coaches. So I've said 7-5 is where I'm at in terms of being a really successful season. Like I said, 6-6, I'm not going to be mad. 7-5, though, feels, you know, like a good coach could get there. And 8-4, to me, is the absolute ceiling.
Yeah, I don't think there'd be a fan upset with 8-4. Now,
No. The
average first-year head coach in the College Football Matrix metric, the average first-year performance is one game under expectation.
Okay, so...
So that would be 7-5, 3-5, or 7-5, 4-4.
Okay, so the average first-year coach costs his team a game.
Yeah.
Basically. And is that through underperformance, or is that just through... I guess continuity.
Yeah,
and any number of variables.
Yeah,
okay.
And it could just be. It's like I always think about, you know, year one of Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. That was a 10-2 team that lost on a punt.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, any number of things can go wrong to make you lose a game or go one under expectation.
Again, we're talking to Will Warren, Fox Sports Knoxville, statistician, contributor on the McKinney team hotline. So, do you have the numbers in front of you in terms of who had the best year one coach effect? Because I'm thinking back to first-year coaches in recent memory. It doesn't seem like any jumped out in terms of, I guess, being a huge surprise in year one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, Urban Meyer at Ohio State, you know, they went from, what, 6-6 to, like, undefeated?
Yeah, the number one, I don't have...
Now, granted, he wasn't a year one coach. He was just year one in a new situation.
I don't have the hard numbers right here, but number one I would have to think would be Gus Malzahn at Auburn.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So it was probably him, Meyer, and then some scattered amount of, like, group of five guys below
that. Sure, sure. I mean, but even, you know, obviously Urban Meyer had big-time SEC experience at Florida, winning two national titles. Gus Malzahn had been a first-year coach at, what was it, Arkansas State?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he had done very well at Arkansas State in the 1 year.
Now, those guys obviously aren't Jeremy Pruitt, who is first-year head coach ever.
Period.
You know, obviously the more applicable comparison would be Kirby Smart, who we feel like probably had a negative effect on Georgia in year one, right?
Going massively. He went three games under expectation his first year.
Okay.
By schedule, location, and a base coach effect, that was a 10-2 team.
Okay. So he coached a 10-2 team to 7-5.
Right, but he gained those games back in year two.
Obviously.
With what also was a 10-2 team that went 11-1, well, 12-1. But.
Now, when you say 8-4, 4-4 in the SEC, obviously that would mean a win over West Virginia.
Right.
So a base-level coach beats West Virginia, in, you know, not necessarily in year one, but in, you know, his year three, if you will, or when he's had enough data to be established as a baseline coach.
Right.
So you beat West Virginia. Does it have the other numbers? Does a baseline coach beat Florida
at
home, I assume?
I'll just read you the base losses.
Okay, give me the losses that a normal coach should lose. I'm going to guess Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, and is it South Carolina?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, all of those. And okay. Three of those are obvious. South Carolina is a little less obvious. That will be more of a toss-up game.
In Tennessee fans' eyes, I think they would look at Tennessee as having, right now, if you asked them, if they were honest, they'd probably say, the optimistic ones would say they have a 45% chance of winning that game. I think the more wait-and-see fans would look and say 35% at best.
Right. And that's fair. Now, South Carolina's roster, 20th most talented in the nation, 9th most in the SEC.
So Tennessee goes into that game with a more talented roster.
Right.
Per recruiting rankings, not so much development, because that is what Tennessee fans are questioning when it comes to this last regime, right? Like, are these guys, yeah, they have star rankings, but are they developed physically? Are they mentally developed to play SEC football? Now, that's where you kind of lose me on these numbers, because Jarrett Garantano looks a lot better on paper than he did on the field last year.
But you have to consider the Butch Jones effect with that, too.
Well, I know, but can you overdo that in 1 year?
No.
Like, Jonathan Kongbo, is he all of a sudden going to be a JUCO? Was he a JUCO All-American? I feel like he was the
JUCO
best.
JUCO five-star.
Yeah, I was going to say, is he gonna, all of a sudden going to look like a five-star? Is Drew Richmond going to be the left tackle building block that we thought we had, you know, when he recruited? Because, obviously, he was a big five-star as well. That's where these numbers kind of lose me, because those guys look better on paper than they've looked in 3 years. Can you, or, you know, in Kongbo's case, was it 1 year, 2 years? How long's Kongbo been here?
2 years.
Yeah, Richmond's going into his senior year, correct? Like,
well, he redshirted 1 year. Right?
Okay, but he's okay. So this will be his fourth year. Either way, we didn't think Drew Richmond would be playing this fourth year. Like, when you recruited him, a lot of people probably thought he was going to play 3 years and go to the NFL.
Right.
Now, can you undo, you know, those years of bad habits from another coaching staff in one off season? That's the question.
No, I mean, I don't think, and this is why I do caution this metrics idea of winning the West Virginia game, is you can't undo 5 years of Butch Jones in one game.
Sure.
I think you can undo a good amount of Butch Jones over the course of a full season. And it's, you know, maybe Jonathan Kongbo doesn't play like a five-star, but he plays like a good, solid player for the first time ever. Like, he's consistent. Maybe Drew Richmond finally stops whiffing on blocks over and over. Maybe you get the first good offensive line Tennessee's had in six seasons. Those would be substantial ways to reverse the decline.
Okay. Yeah, and look, I said 8-4 is not out of the realm of possibility to me. Like, would I be shocked if Tennessee went into Charlotte and beat West Virginia? No, it's West Virginia.
Yeah.
Like, their offense is going to be great, but I don't want to sound like a optimistic homer at this point, but I feel like our offense will be able to score on their defense.
Yeah, and by Bill Connolly's S&P Plus metric, the one we used a lot last year, Tennessee's only going to be a 6-point underdog in that
game. I mean, right now in Vegas, they're 7-point underdogs. Now, you know, it's fluctuated a little bit, 7.5 up to 9 at certain points, but for the most part, under a 10-point underdog. So, you know, that's not a huge upset. That gives Tennessee a 30% chance of winning that game.
Right.
Which, you know,
that's fine.
Happens every three and a half times out of 10. So Tennessee is able to force a couple turnovers, or, you know, something weird happens, like, Tennessee's probably going to need a help in this game. They're going to need help, and someone's going to have to overperform what we think of them, or in West Virginia's case, underperform what we think of them. But it's not like West Virginia's coming in with a top-ranked defense, unless I'm mistaken, that's going to be able to shut down Tennessee.
Right.
It's not like
it's not a good defense.
It's not an SEC defense who can overpower you like Georgia or Alabama, basically, is what I'm getting at. It's a defense that's going to give Tennessee chances to score points.
Without being rude to West Virginia, their defense is on the level of like a Kentucky.
Okay. So, I mean,
it's very doable.
So, like, you know,
but it's stopping the offense. That's the issue.
No, I mean, obviously, yeah. So, I mean, there are ways around that, be it, you know, you onside kick somewhere, you fake a punt somewhere, you force an early turnover on Will Grier. I don't know, but you can create more possessions one way or the other and try to overcome their offense, try to keep them off the field. We'll see, because I'm hoping that, you know, Trey Smith, and we talked about Drew Richmond, I'm hoping those guys can, you know, open some running lanes, and you can kind of control that way. You can control the game, you know, the old school way of being on the ground, churning out first downs, controlling time of possession, and you're limiting what West Virginia can do. But either way, Tennessee beating West Virginia, not out of the realm of possibility.
And something you have to remember with being an underdog there is, as an underdog at UT, Butch Jones went 3-20 straight up.
That's not good.
No, the average underdog wins 25% of the time.
Okay.
So over a 25-game sample, Pruitt would improve on average by 3 or 4 games.
Sure. So, like, you could sell me on that, and then Florida, you know, if Tennessee does beat West Virginia, you're going to get an even better home atmosphere.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to be Jeremy Pruitt's first home game that matters of consequence. And then, of course, if you're undefeated, yeah, sure, that'll take it up to a 10 instead of hovering around an 8.5 or 9. So, you know, that's not out of the realm of possibility to me. I've said it all off season. Like, I could see Tennessee going 8-4, but everything has to break correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the schedule, I don't think Tennessee should lose to Kentucky, Missouri, or Vanderbilt in the state of Tennessee this year.
No, these four games are pretty solid wins by the metric. The only one that would have any questionable doubt about it would be the home Missouri game.
We'll see what Jeremy Pruitt can do. Year one, coaching effect. You said in history those guys underperform a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, 7-5. 7-5 feels about right, winning one of the West Virginia Florida games or dropping one somewhere you're not supposed to. 8-4 seems crazy to me to like set that as the baseline, because I do feel like that is the absolute best case scenario. Not like what an average coach would do with this roster against this schedule. I think that would be like a really good performance from a coaching staff.
Right.
Will Warren, thank you for joining us. Somebody track down Cody. Tell Cody and come out. Probably fixing coffee in the bathroom. All right, Will, appreciate you joining us. We'll be back on the other side. It's Talk Sports on Fox Sports Knoxville.
Send our podcasts anywhere. iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the kitchen counter, even the bathroom.
I was just shaving!
The WKGN app or online at foxsportsknoxville.com. Fan Run Radio.
Finally tracked down Cody. Where the hell did you go?
I left. I had to go get a coffee. I told you that in the first segment.
I told you he was getting coffee somewhere.
Well, yeah. I left the studio. I knew you had Will Warren coming
you
on.
You left?
I left the studio. I got in my car. I went to get some coffee. I can't make it through a show without my 100% ground Arabica beans.
We have intern Andrew to go get coffee if needed. Like, I don't want you to abuse that power of intern Andrew. And I don't want you to take advantage of his kindness because he's not a gopher. He's a, you know, information collector for us. But
well, that's what
you
I
actually
was...
left?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because, you know, intern Andrew the other day, he took care of me when I was sick. I was
right.
A little under the weather. And, you know, I didn't want to take advantage of that power.
So what would you have done if the segment would have ended and you weren't here?
No, I had it timed out. I mean, I was listening in my car and I knew, you know, I knew where we
okay.
were.
Okay, I mean, I guess a commercial break's like 3 minutes. You would have had time to get back. All
I knew we had 15 to 20 minutes to spare. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, what'd you think about Will's set?
I didn't listen to much of it.
You said you were listening in the car.
Well, no, I checked over to make sure it was still, you know, to make sure it wasn't just you, like,
so you
where's Cody at? Yeah.
You weren't even supporting the station.
Well, it was on a 5-minute car ride. I mean, come on.
Well, to catch you up to what Will Warren said, we were looking at Tennessee's schedule. I'm not even going to. Do it today.
Big time breaking news here. The Fair Board in, I'm guessing, Davidson County has given tentative approval to lease its land for a Major League Soccer stadium. For the Major League Soccer stadium that everyone knew was coming, you know. So the Nashville Fair Board has approved leasing land for the Metro Sports Authority, the purpose of building the soccer stadium. The board members don't have a lot of details they want in place yet, apparently. They have yet to see the details of one of the most controversial parts of the deal. This is from WSMV in Nashville, Channel 4. As part of the agreement, this is kind of cool. A private developer gets to lease 10 acres in the middle of the fairgrounds for a mixed-use development. That includes 900 apartments, a 200-room hotel, and other uses. The agreement is still being negotiated.
Okay. Cool.
You have no interest in the MLS stadium?
No, I mean, I think it's... I was going to say cool, but whenever Nashville got an MLS team, I was like, okay, that's neat. Now I don't really care.
Well, they're going to start breaking ground on the stadium soon. I mean, this is just the next step in the process.
I figured you'd be all in post-World Cup.
Yeah, we're all such big soccer fans now.
I understand your point, Ben Lee. I prefer my soccer on the pitch. I don't much like talking about building stadiums. I want to talk about Liverpool going out and trying to acquire this new player. All right?
What's the difference between on the pitch and a stadium?
Sounds a little anti-American.
No.
Are
you
going to lie?
No.
Is
a soccer field not a pitch here in America?
You're misunderstanding what I'm saying. I'm not worried about them building the stadium. I want to talk about the actual game. Not getting ready to play the game. I want to talk about the rosters. And look, Liverpool's coming out trying to get Alisson. If they get Alisson from Roma, I mean, Liverpool, I don't know if you saw the Champions League final. Quite frankly, their goalkeeping kind of let them down. Their keeper kind of let them down. Let a couple of easy goals get in. If they can go out and get this guy from Roma, not only are we at least finishing top two in the Premier League, Champions League feeling pretty good about it. Another deep run. I'm just saying, if you get Alisson, hope I'm saying
Alisson's
his name right.
A girl's name.
Alisson. If they get Alisson, pair him with Mo Salah, I mean, watch out, world. That's what I'm focused on in my football fandom, not...
Oh, well, they're building the new stadium
Nashville. I'm just thinking. They haven't even built the stadium yet.
Well, they're leasing the land. I'm just saying, for a guy who is so pro-Tennessee, I mean,
you
like the Vols, you like the Titans, and then all of a sudden we try to talk soccer. And, no, I like Liverpool, a random place in England that I don't even like, because you told me you wouldn't even go to England. You said you have no desire to go to Europe. You don't care anything about it.
That is 100% accurate. And I'm not saying I'm going to a Liverpool game. Never said anything about going now.
Just seems a little more important, I think, to, you know, locally.
Not excited to have Tennessee potentially host a World Cup game in 2026?
Yeah, idiots. They aren't going to host it at MLS Stadium. They'll have to host it at the Titan Stadium. Do you guys know anything about World Cup soccer? You think they're going to pile into a 20,000-seat MLS Stadium? No, they're going to play at Nissan Stadium.
Are they that small?
They're not very big. I mean, it might be like 30,000 or 40,000, but either way, they're going to want more. Like in Atlanta, they're going to go to the Mercedes-Benz Dome. Like they're going to have like 70,000-80,000 people there.
I'll just come play one in Neyland then.
I mean, if we had more hotels and, you know, if we could handle it, they'd probably look at Neyland Stadium as maybe appealing. I don't know. Not playing at the MLS stadium, though. Do you guys know anything about World Cup soccer?
Not really.
Am I the only sophisticated soccer fan here?
Apparently you are.
I watched one game.
Well, they're building this thing. It said like 900 apartments and 200 hotels.
Well, that's cool for the economy of Nashville. And I'm sure that they're going to find a way to make the taxpayers pay for this new stadium, and the city of Nashville will just get to reap the benefits all the way around.
I didn't know you were so anti-Nashville.
Send us a damn break. I was trying to talk about the Vols. Time to defend the show a little bit. Chad tweets in, can we address the way Cody pronounced the word?
Arabica.
Is that like what's in coffee, I guess?
That's the beans.
Okay.
And that's how you pronounce it. Because I went to YouTube, I looked at three different pronunciations. It is Arabica beans. I got it right.
Terrell tweets in, Atlanta United plays at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. It's an MLS stadium. It ain't no damn MLS stadium. Terrell. They might play MLS soccer there, but you know who else plays there? The Falcons. And other football games, like the Chick-fil-A kickoff.
The Peach Bowl.
The Peach Bowl, also
SEC,
sponsored by Chick-fil-A.
The SEC Championship.
It's a football stadium that they happen to let an MLS team play in. They did not build that billion-dollar stadium for the MLS.
No, that stadium was built for the Falcons and for Alabama.
And that's why it'll be in line and pretty much be a lock to be a World Cup host. Very different than what they're probably building in Nashville, I would assume. I would assume MLS-only stadiums, much smaller than the billion-dollar state-of-the-art arena that Arthur Blank and the city of Atlanta built. You know, every now and then we're dumb. Every now and then we're dumb. But I don't like this culture of nitpicking us constantly.
Can we address the way Cody pronounced the word Arabica?
No, Chad, we can't.
Sounds like we did address it. Sounds like Cody's confident he said it correctly. I don't know. But I'm going to ride with Cody. He's confident. He said it right.
I looked. I went to YouTube. I watched three separate pronunciation videos. And they all said it the way I said it. So, unless three other people on YouTube are wrong, which chances of that, very low.
Now, how do you say it again?
Arabico. Arabica. Arabica.
The first time you didn't say it like Arabica?
Arabica.
Is it or uh?
Or Arabica.
Is it or uh?
Or uh? It's the same sound.
U-H or A-H? Or
no, I guess it's the same sound. Arabica.
Ah and are not the same.
It's Arabica.
Either way. Arabica. Whatever. Works for me. We got some rule changes in the college football world coming. According to from the I guess the SEC media days, the head of officials addressed some we already know about, like some boring knee pads and pants must cover the knee.
That is tough, by the way.
To keep the knee pads over the knee, to keep the pants covered the knee.
Yeah, it can be tough. It can be tough. The pants are so short.
If not, players must leave at least for one play to correct the issue. If a player calls for a fair catch behind the 25-yard line on a kickoff, the ball will then belong to them at the 25-yard line. We already knew about that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
There will be a 40-second play clock after touchdowns and kickoffs in an effort to keep the game moving.
Say that again. It sounds vaguely important.
You get 40 seconds after a touchdown to kick the extra point or go for two.
Right.
And then after that, there's another 40-second play clock to signal for play.
To kick off.
To kick off.
That's good. That speeds the game up a bit.
It'll probably – when does the commercial break come in there?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because normally after the PAT, they'll take a break. Not on every score, but
yeah,
often.
Where does the TV timeout come in there?
It's a good question.
Are they still going to have a TV timeout and then just start a 40-second clock? Because they're still going to take a TV timeout sometime between touchdown and kickoff. Or are they just going to wait till after the kickoff to do like a 5-minute break?
Maybe that's what they're going to do. Maybe they're going to do touchdown, PAT, kickoff.
And then like an extra long break?
Why does it have to be extra long?
To make up for the missed timeout, because sometimes they go touchdown timeout, kickoff timeout. Sometimes. They're trying to knock that, you know, cut back on those, at least in the NFL level, but sometimes that happens.
I don't know. I saw the thing yesterday about them putting a clock on the TV timeout. I don't know if that's necessarily going to make it shorter, though.
Other than linemen in the tackle box on the line of scrimmage, all players must direct their block from the front. It's a safer block, so basically you can't come in from the side.
That's
outside the tackle box.
Yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. On anything 5 yards or beyond, no blocking below the waist. So wide receivers 10 yards down the field can no longer go at your legs. Linemen 10 yards down the field can no longer go at your legs.
That's going to be interesting to watch, because that's one of the few ways a lineman can can
wipe out a
get
couple
a
guys.
DB in space.
Yeah.
You know. A lot of times though, just getting in front of him is enough to help the running back. You know, just the fact that a DB has to address the lineman, he doesn't necessarily even have to make contact.
10-second runoff following an instant replay. That's probably smart because, you know, stopping for replay stops the game. You theoretically could not lose any time if you were, you know, coming from behind and trying to catch up. Limited number of coaching headsets. If a corporate entity has bought naming rights to the stadium, it can have logo in two spots. Field goal penalty enforcement is now like extra points. If you have a personal foul on the defense or an unsportsmanlike conduct on a successful field goal, they can keep the points and have the penalty enforced on the kickoff. Or they can have the points off the board and enforce it.
What's the part about the naming rights again? Is that like on the 25-yard lines? They can have their logo smeared
on
the
field? I don't know where. It said two placements. Hour one in the books. Hour two on deck. We'll kick off hour two with headlines. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fox Sports Knoxville.